I went to the neurologist with the head, and that was the real one, you know, 8 months with PCS, post-concussion syndrome. I wanted to build in a challenge that encompassed both strength and endurance.
The 200 challenge, which sounds absolute madness.
200 kilo squat, 200 kilo deadlift, 200 hours of running, of which I completed 14 marathons, and it worked out 7 days. Can't even perceive how you're going to carry on with this. You know, you're absolutely totaled, like at my ankles.
This week's physical specimen, Humphrey Boddington. Humphrey, so excited to have you on the podcast. Really appreciate you making time to come and have a chat. I was really excited about this for a number of reasons. Firstly, from your physical rap sheet is pretty extensive. We've got the 200 challenge, which sounds absolute madness. You know, 14 marathons in 7 days, the 200 kg squat, and deadlift, the London to Edinburgh bike ride in just over 24 hours. We've got your 24-hour run where you clocked up 116 miles, and not to mention, you know, a handful of ultras getting onto the Welsh 3000. It's quite a lot to process, and the more I kind of went into what you did, I was running out of space in my notes, to be perfectly honest. But I think before we get into all of that and how those kind of adventures and expeditions came about, it'd be really interesting to hear kind of from you, your perspective on why you're doing what you are at the moment, and kind of get a bit of a background as to who you are and kind of your context earlier in life that has driven you to where you are today, and why I have no doubt driven you to continue to do these kind of adventures moving forwards.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks for having me. It was actually Edinburgh to London, which means that it was all downhill.
Okay.
So you're heading south, but otherwise it was, yeah, accurate. That one came about because of an Ironman, but after the Ironman, spending so much time on the bike. But how did I get into this? Well, rugby used to take up the extracurricular time, and then a series of head injuries, like most people do, kind of made it nonsensical to keep rolling with it. And I remember doing a summer job, which was marqueeing, long hours, sort of working the weekends, that sort of thing. And we had a rare Sunday off, and filling the time, I was watching, you know, the Iron Cowboy, James Lawrence.
Okay.
Have you seen his documentary, 50 Ironmans, 50 Days?
I've heard of that, 50 Ironman, 50 Days.
Oh, you've got to watch this. You're an Ironman.
I've got to get into it.
It's epic. So he's lately done 101 in 101 days, but before that he had a doc of 100 Ironman, 50 in 50 states in 50 days. And I was watching that thinking, the marathon is the pinnacle of endurance sport.
Sure.
And I think most sort of like meathead rugby players think that is the sort of target if you want to transition into marathon, just tick that one off the list.
Yeah.
But I watched that documentary and then thought, oh, bloody hell, what's my excuse? And we have a 5 mile loop around my house at home, and I was eating a burger watching this watching this documentary, and then I just strapped up, put on the trainers, and ran the loop until I hit a marathon, you know, holding my iPhone, doing the step count kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's when I suddenly realized that actually there's this whole world beyond marathon, ultra, all of that sort of mad shit that lots of people are doing. And I think that was the real start. But I was recovering from head injuries, but also ACL reconstruction. I was about 9-10 months down the line from having the knee done. So it was kind of I wanted to prove to myself that the bloody leg still works. So
yeah,
I think that was the transition. It was filling the void that rugby left from not being able to play sport again.
Mm. And why is sport kind of so important for you? I mean, even before rugby, how did you?
Sport is, I think on reflection, it's just, well, first of all, it's just fun. It's play. Mm. And things happen quickly in sport. It's I think it evokes something very primal. It's just a group of people working together to achieve a certain goal, and it's the only place where things start to happen very quickly. You know, there's ups, there's downs, there's cohesion, camaraderie, that all kind of goes with that. And that's why sport's fun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think, one thing about endurance sport is that there's less of that unless you're joining a club, and you probably have a club in Madrid. But most of my training hours, especially around the Ironman stuff, was during COVID. So it was solo bike rides, solo runs, etc. And I think that also helps in some ways, you know, develop a level of resilience. But I didn't know what big sort of heading out on group rides and that sort of community aspect of it was like.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the cohesion, playfulness, sense of belonging that sports is. You just can't get it in any other sort of parameter of life. It's
sure.
It's just sure. fun.
And so at what point did rugby stop being a part of your life and you said, right, that's it, I'm done, I'm out, and you move on to, so you're sat down, you're like, right, I'm going to smash a marathon, and then how did you transition to kind of fixing your sights on, right, Ironman is the one, I'm going to work towards that, and what did that kind of journey look like for you?
Well, it was watching that documentary with James Lawrence. But I think it's always, I knew about Ironmans and I knew that they were ridiculous distances, but I had no idea what the distances actually were. But when I went to the neurologist with the head, and that was the real one, you know, lots of people have ACLs and you can get back from that, but it was the head knocks, and not, you know, I was 8 months with PCS, post-concussion syndrome, just not being able to sit through lectures whilst I was at university, worrying about how it would affect my final exams, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually got back to playing afterwards in the seven sort of season, so in the summer. But I'd get ridiculous sort of symptoms from not even smacking heads, just taking contact, making offloads, sprinting after a chase, and walking upstairs in the business school. And that's when I was like, there's nobody's got any answers for me of while I'm feeling this way. Even, you know, the best specialist who were in my corner sort of looking at my brain scans just said, you might be a headachy person. But I think when that sort of stuff happens, it makes it just, you know, it's not worth carrying on. Unless there's a real solution that will work, and then looking at all the long-term effects that it might have, it makes sense to choose a sport that's a little less contact heavy. So
yeah, that's true.
Dipping your toes into the endurance space was a natural progression, given that we all had lots of time on our hands during the sort of COVID times, and it all sort of came hand in hand. I think I was only working post uni for about 8 months before the lockdown happened, so I started training for the Ironman straight away as sort of a coping mechanism for moving into town in London. Training in the basement, bought one of those Wahoo trainers, the wheel drive ones. Essential. That you just strap the wheel. So and it was something new, you know, learning to swim basically, and it was fun for about 3 months, and then it drags on a bit.
It certainly does. You've got to really commit to it and spend a lot of time on that damn machine, not to mention pools and their endless timetable nightmares.
Yeah, yeah. I was Latchmere Leisure Centre.
Okay.
Was my training ground.
That's the one, is it?
Yeah. You can basically hear the Rookers screaming as you walk in off the floors. But yeah, it's got water and a few lanes. It's got a slow lane.
That's all you need. Yeah. And so did you set your sights on a particular Ironman and say, right, that's the goal, I'm going to train towards that? Or was it purely, this is something I want to get into, I've got to get half decent on the bike, as you say, I've got to learn to swim? What was the process there?
Yeah, so I booked into a half originally, thinking, God, these are expensive. Like, what are they actually putting on?
Absolute madness.
550 quid for a race fee.
Yeah.
Naively, booked onto a half thinking, oh, that seems manageable, you know. And then I think I was Yeah, I was on the phone to a mate and they were like, well, if you're going to do all that training for a half, you might as well do a full one. And I was like, actually, you're probably right. I'll book a full one a month after the half. And I did it after, I think I've been to the pub for a few beers, a bit of Dutch courage. And yeah, booked onto the full, and then it was just full steam ahead. And just loving the process. Because there's so much more to the actual training, isn't there? It's the nutritional bit, understanding the biomechanics of the body, things like bike fits that I never would have thought about.
Sure.
All these little 1% gains, and you can start to get quite obsessive with it as well. And there's heaps of stuff everyone knows you can learn anything off YouTube. Mm-hmm. But spent a lot of time basically watching YouTube videos on how to swim, how to get through these 6-7 hour bike sessions.
Mm-hmm.
It was just going 2 feet into the process. It wraps you in, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And just thinking about how can we provide value to someone who's perhaps heard of Ironman, is willing, as you just said, marathon was kind of previously the top of physical achievement, and how we can push that boundary further out. Someone who's looking at getting to Ironman, where could they start? And in terms of that learning process, did you do that just by yourself researching online? Did you go and get a coach involved to help you structure that? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, so I had a lad who called me the other day, and he was looking to get into it as well. And I was thinking, trying to put myself back in the shoes of where I was. And it is daunting. There's way more questions than answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember online just gets complicated. I remember Triathlon Terran was one guy that I came across. Nick Bear was another guy had just done one. So look at all the videos that he had done and made over the Ironman period and trying to figure out what his weekly schedule looked like. Yep. But of course, if you have a coach, which he did, the weekly schedule changes, every block of training. So it's hopeless, but not really knowing how they structure it is difficult. So I found the most amount of clarity from speaking to people who had done one. And that was incredibly, it was sort of calming. Speaking the truth about what you need to do, the minimum sort of things. Things like researching the over distances, which you'll probably know better than me, but I remember just sort of writing down the over distance of each one, because the biggest anxiety with Ironman is how far you've got to do. But quickly you realize that that's not actually the problem. And I spent a lot of waste junk miles training because I was just purely doing volume, yep, rather than doing the top end fitness stuff. So the speed stuff, which helps. I think long story short, is definitely reach out to someone. I'm happy for anyone to reach out to me about it. I'll give you my 2 cents. You might be in the position where you can afford a coach, which is going to save you a lot of mental strain, because sitting down and self-filling on a Sunday night or whatever is just a pain in the ass and quite overwhelming. And if you haven't got all of that like I did, it's just mix and matching, watching YouTube, but also just be prepared to just try and just boil it down to the basic principles of what you need to be able to achieve. And it's not as complicated as some of those YouTube videos make out to be. You don't need to do as much running as you think. The bike work is more the priority. And for me at the beginning, I was basically learning to swim. So I'd do three or four pool sessions a week, just sometimes on the way back from work, having done a swim in the morning, just get in the pool and just get used to breathing. So just hands on the side and just practicing breathing, just little drill sessions like that. I think are catalysts to getting better rather than just getting in there and trying to churn out the miles. Because once you get the techers right with swimming, you can swim forever.
Yeah, very true. Certainly need to get the practice in better, and it's...
And floaty pants as well. I've got heavy legs, so I got those
wetsuit
shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolute game changer. But with the lockdown and the pools, a lot of my training was done in just open water, because I could get to open water but not pools.
I mean, that's the dream. There's no crossing lanes of people. There's no timetables. Yeah. might be a bit.
I was the guy who they'd come smacking my feet up behind me in the pool because I'm just so bloody slow. Always thinking I'm quicker than I am, and that putting myself in like the middle lane when I really shouldn't be there.
Well, at least there's a bit of they were respecting the lanes. Over here, it's an absolute free for all. I tell you.
Oh, that. Really?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to get into it. I'll start getting very irritated. So that was your first kind of major challenge, and from there, yeah. So just remind me, when did that take place? This was a couple of years ago.
I forget now, but it was a couple of years ago.
Okay.
It actually, so I had two booked, Vichy and one in Portugal, but both of them got cancelled. Which was actually a blessing in disguise because I didn't end up having to pay for the race fee. But we ended up, a few lads got theirs cancelled too, and we ended up doing one at home in November. Mm-hmm. So it was 9 degree water doing it around the Cotswolds, and as strict as we could, you know. Okay. no earphones, no drafting, all the race rules.
Yeah.
Mapped out the distance, and we managed to mobilise it within a couple of weeks and get some lads down. And still unfortunately, it was that curfew on the pubs as well. So I'd finished just after 10 o'clock at night, and I couldn't even get a pint after finishing.
This is the curfew where you could have a Scotch egg counted as a decent meal, and therefore you
a pint. That's right.
Scotch egg sales must have gone through the absolute roof in the UK.
I consider myself a Scotch egg connoisseur, by the way. I know my Scotch eggs.
We'll see if we can put some tasting tips in the show notes. And so from there, it seems that that's really kind of kick-started your endurance interest. And the amount of challenges you've put yourself on from there has just been, mind-blowing, all the kind of stuff you've been getting into. It was very interesting. You did that Ironman supporting Head for Change. That was the 200 challenge. Was Head for Change?
Yeah.
So obviously, again, very connected to your concussion, and it seems like you're really trying to make a difference and move things forward there. How did the Head for Change, the 200 challenge, how did that come about? Because that is, it's fascinating, because this is all about, how can we raise our horizons in what is possible, what our perception of possible is. And so you've gone your journey there from going from a marathon to an Ironman, raising your sights as to, ooh, that's quite a lot. But once you've done it, then the bar is set as to, I know I can do that. Right, what's next? The 200 challenge is quite an undertaking. So just run us through what that exactly looked like.
Yeah, it's always a bit of a mouthful. So one of the things that I didn't like so much about the Ironman is it was very, swim, bike, run heavy. Mm. And with the background in rugby, I enjoy the weightlifting part, or at least like to keep on a bit of size. And then I came across these guys who are pioneering this sort of hybrid training space. So using strength training as a tool to reduce some of the miles that you need to do through endurance. So pre-fatiguing the legs, for example, through weight training, and then heading out on a run. And I like that aspect of training. So I wanted to build in a challenge that encompassed both strength and endurance. And also the bike bit is the longest bit, which I found tedious, I burnt myself out on the bike having done that 400 mile cycle in between Edinburgh and London, and then thought, right, I'm going to just stick to running. It's the sort of quickest to do, isn't it? I think even Lawrence Armstrong prefers running to cycling, but
says it all, doesn't
it? Yeah. So it was 200 kilos. It was 200 challenge because you're 200% more likely to have dementia over the age of 50 if you've had 5 concussions. So it was to raise awareness and also raise money for this charity called Head for Change, which is Alex Popham's charity, which helps basically athletes, present, future, to help with some of the repercussions of taking lots of head knocks, and also their families as well. So it was cool. It was a challenge that a charity that I resonated with. And I thought this kind of kickstarted my area into the endurance space. So 200 kilo squat, 200 kilo deadlift, 200 hours of running, of which I completed 14 marathons, and it worked out as 7 days. And it was all between 10 rugby clubs in the UK as well. So we started in Gloucester, down to Bristol, and then up and around, and ended up running to the hallowed turf, of course, at Twickenham to finish. So yeah, it was good. It was a good bit of crack, and actually I learnt heaps on that as well. You know, multi-day event is different gravy to doing, you know, something in 24 hours or whatever. And previously I'd never spanned something across a week. So it was cool. Yeah,
absolutely. It's an incredibly imaginative challenge that you set yourself there, and really nicely links in with your history in rugby, and really kind of raising awareness for something that is only really kind of beginning to gain some traction now, and it's quite terrifying for me especially. I really kind of feel identified with yourself as well, having myself gone through a load of concussions and because of that switching to triathlon, and just now I finally got first gym membership just before Christmas.
Congratulations.
Again, because it's been far too long, and as you say, you completely back off the weight training. But this particular challenge, how did you kind of conceptualize that? That imagination, that creativity of putting it all together, how did that come about?
Literally just running figures. I was doing a lot of research anyway because of Conquer and the company I was starting. Mm. And it was a poignant challenge there with the number 200. And I thought, what can I fit into that? Running, weightlifting. And I don't know, it just sort of these things. The thing about running is that there's a lot of time spent on your own feet with nobody else and just in your own thoughts. So that's where you come up with the challenges, is running them over in your head. I often run and just sort of voice note on my phone or whatever, or get Siri to make a reminder for me. And half of the stuff is utter bollocks when I get back, because you're in that sort of runner's high state where you think you've come up with a next game-changing idea. But some of the stuff actually sticks, and I think it was one of those moments. Yeah. That must have been how I came up with it. I don't remember exactly, but I just knew I wanted to do a combination of weightlifting and running together.
You said something interesting there. So with regards to running an endurance sport, you know, it's a very solo event. You're by yourself, and you're in your own thoughts. But there's a huge amount of support. And coming back to something you wrote elsewhere, that it is very much a team sport at the same time, and you need the support and help and motivation of a lot of other people kind of around you. How do you find that kind of support network and your kind of tribe of like-minded people? What do those people kind of look like, and how have you managed to connect with them?
Yeah, I think they have to be certainly quite tolerable. I mean, heading out on the bike, especially, you know this with Ironman stuff, if you're doing it by yourself for 7-8 hours on the weekend, it can get pretty tedious for the people that you live with or the people that you're around or whatever. So there's definitely a level of acceptance that has to go on. And everyone's, you know, all the videos on YouTube says, like, make sure you ask your kind of family first. And I remember thinking, oh, fuck this, I'm going to do it anyway, whether they want me to do it or not. So it probably is a good idea to have the open conversation about it. Mm. But I don't think it should stop you, because there's so much learning that you pull out of these challenges, and spending the time by yourself on the bike is where a lot of the sort of mental development gets done. I think most of the Ironman training, especially when you're training for your first one, is mainly mental, and it's sort of roughly 90 days. I think you can get fit enough if you're coming from a good level of fitness, but it's a lot about the mental resilience and calcifying the mind that comes with it. But point is team is absolutely important, and some of those challenges, you can't, it's different gravy if you're doing it unsupported. You know, carrying all your own stuff, just from the little things like having somebody just make a bit of breakfast for you in the morning, because there are times when you literally just can't even perceive how you're going to carry on with this. You know, mm-hmm. absolutely totaled. Like, my ankles were absolutely buggered on that 200 challenge. You know, I was sort of sliding around in the kitchen on my ass to get to eat in the evening, or in the night. I remember sort of I was staying at a mate's house in Northampton before setting off from there, and having to sort of basically crawl to the bathroom and the light because all the swelling had pooled in my knees and ankles in the evening. But it's those things that you need people to help you out with, because when you stop and you start to swell up and everything starts to pool and get stiff again, you're not very mobile until you wonderfully start get going and you're 3 miles down the track and suddenly you feel like you can run forever again. But yeah, it's incredible. You need them in the moments where you basically can't achieve normal basic tasks by yourself to help you perform the next day.
100%. But in terms of, okay, so one thing is doing the Ironman, it's one day, you get it done, and that's that. The following day is recovery. But now looking at 7 days, doing 2 marathons a day, that is a different order of magnitude. Preparation, training, how did you, was it quite similar to your Ironman preparation? Obviously just much more focused on the running element. Did you build weight training into that as well? How did you go about the preparation for that?
Yeah, this was totally different, much more of a tactical dance towards it. But I used the strength training to the advantage, but the whole thing in that was the 8 months sort of training for it was all about trying to get the squat up. I had the deadlift. I actually started off with the idea of doing a marathon a day for 7 days, and about 4 weeks before starting, I was like, I'm underselling myself here. I'm going to double that distance. then the squat was the whole thing. It was just trying to get that bloody squat up. I've always hated back squats. And I just don't think I'm the right build for it. I've buggered my ankles up so many times and I just haven't got that range of motion there, yeah. Which all sounds like big excuses, but I think it's just the hardest movement in the gym. And often I think like, what do I hate the most? Like with the Ironman training, it's like, what do I hate the most? Bike. Okay, let's set the next challenge as a bike challenge, see if I can learn to love it. Mm-hmm. And it was the same with that. I was just like, let's get that squat up. So it was lots of pre-fatiguing, so even just heavy. I remember at the sort of peak before the actual event, I would be doing two or three training sessions a day where you hit the squat on the weekend in the morning, big leg session, then head out for like an 18-20 mile run. No real focus on speed because it didn't matter, so it was just pre-fatiguing, mm-hmm. leg sessions, and then into the runs. Which crushes down your miles because you don't need to. I was thinking maximum I was hitting sort of 70 or 80 mile weeks rather than what you'd expect, which sounds ridiculous, of course, for anybody who's just getting into endurance stuff. But there are people who hit 100 plus mile weeks before doing 100 milers. But I think you can squeeze that volume down with some of the weight training what it helps you achieve.
Yeah, that's really interesting and definitely something I've hadn't really come across before talking to you and looking into kind of your routine, because I think you were doing kind of 3 weight training sessions a week and about 4 runs in total. And it almost seems this idea of pre-fatiguing, if you look at it from another perspective, it's I can get a decent run session in because you know my legs were just done. But actually using it to your advantage is quite an interesting angle. On one thing is hitting the gym, you know, for the rugby, and doing the kind of classic exercises there, but then having a really kind of structured and focused approach, tailoring it to running is something quite different. Was this again just based on your own research and how to go about it, or how did you structure those sessions?
Yeah, so there I got a coach involved for this one, and there's some guys who do this, and which I sort of stumbled across on Instagram, or I can't remember how it was, but anyway, reading about them or whatever, one of the chaps is Fergus Crawley, who I probably came across first because a mate of mine knows him and just said, hey, you know, Bodders, you should check this guy out. And that sort of started being like, oh God, you know, the strength and endurance can coexist. It's always typically been that it's one or the other.
Yeah.
And you're never going to be elite in either one, but you can do both concurrently and you can use them to their advantage and help the other one out, which is pretty cool. So I like that way of training. And the thing about that is I started by matching basically an endurance program and just stapling it onto a strength-based program, which is a common mistake that I think a lot of people make when they start the sort of hybrid technique. And it's difficult because there's way too much volume and you just end up not having any energy for any session. So you just started going backwards. But then having a bit more of a structured approach, I just spoke to a coach and he said, let me just schedule it up for you for basically 3 months and that will send you on your way. And so that's what I did. And it is, there's a lot more to juggle with the strength and endurance than just purely endurance. Mm-hmm. There's less of a blueprint. So I think it was good. And also working with a coach, I think for anybody who is interested or wants to take training seriously, do you use a coach?
I did, yeah. Which again was a game changer. I had no idea what I was doing, and more than anything, the mental kind of, I don't want to have to think, well, first I don't know how to train effectively. I was just going out running at 70%, you know, or just smashing it every time, and just also giving me the kind of mental headspace to Monday, right, what have I got to do? Just open it up, that's what you got to do. Saved me a huge amount of kind of research and just kind of free.
That's it, isn't it? It's and also a learning process. You know, you've got somebody to ask about why or what's their rationale behind putting that in.
Yeah.
So you do learn a lot more. And I think that's half the reason why we do these sort of things, is to discover more about how we work. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go through this life in this body with this brain and mind, then you better start understanding how the bloody thing works. So that was my take on it as well, as like more of an investment. Like I'm actually going to get something out of this and understand that. Sure. I can translate into everyday life as well. So yeah, I think if you can afford it, and which they don't, you know, they're not hugely expensive, then it saves a lot of mental energy and can also help you progress faster.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. And so since then, you smashed that one out of the park. That was a great success. And then since then, you've done, you know, a number of different kind of challenges. You've done your ultras, your 50K runs, the Welsh 3000, which I thought was superb. Just run us through what the Welsh 3000 is for
anyone. Yeah, I had no idea what it was either. I met my Bambi was, he's practically a half mountain goat. he said, let's go and do it. And it's basically, if I remember correctly, 15 peaks above 3000 feet in Snowdonia in a day. So once you come up, you come off the ridge about twice or three times over the course of the day. But once you're up on the ridge, it's all right. You know, you don't lose too much altitude. So you're just on top of the ridge and running along it. But we did it in about 18 hours. And again, this is another one of those moments where you realize that actually you've only just scratching the surface. Because back in the 60s or something, when I YouTubed it later after finishing it, there was a guy had done it in 4 hours and 10 minutes or something.
What?
And incredible effort. And that's, I think, some of the world's most, you know, impressive athletes exist in this endurance space. And ultimately, that's what we're made for, isn't it? Homo erectus, they ran down their prey. And I don't know, you've probably read the book Born to Run, but it's a very persuasive argument behind why humans are absolutely born to run. And of course, have prevailed because we can endure better than any other animal on the planet. But you just suddenly see that actually we're not sprinters, we're not fast twitch animals at all, we are endurance beasts. And watching guys like that back in the 60s with, you know, no sports gels, no real kit, basically daps, no trainers, like being able to do that in 4.5 hours when we were really giving it a nudge and it took us about, you know, 12 or 13 hours of moving time is incredible.
It really is exceptional. And I think you've really touched on something there, which for a lot of people as well, I think we get very fixated on the kit. Oh, I need this, then I can do that. The gels, the latest shoes, the whatever. And it's not that at all. It is, you know, this is all about if you just want to go and get out and do it. You know, the sky's the limit as to whatever, as to how creative you want to be with it, and whatever you want to do.
And sometimes I think it hinders success. So thinking about all the sort of things you should have in place and the nice bikes that you should have. I mean, one of the guys that I admire, who I started doing my Ironman training with, it was sort of halfway through, Matt, he used to have to borrow his neighbor's bike to get out. So he'd go and chop the woods in his neighbor's house, chop the wood, get his neighbor's bike borrowed for the weekend, sort of pay his dues in the week to be able to borrow the bike, bought himself some bike shoes. So at least he's got bike shoes and not, he hasn't, you know, just got pedals. And he just smoked me every hill. He just absolutely smoked me. He'd sit in the gym on his watt bike, and the only other time he'd do it is by borrowing his neighbor's bike. But he'd just do laps up and down the hill, while I was just trying to complete, you know, just get to the top. But yeah, there's people out there who just don't prioritize having all the kit, and sometimes it fares them better. Even things like running, I'd never, you know, had all the gels. People say train with the nutrition that you're going to actually race with. And I think that's true to an extent, but don't stress about it if you haven't got all the right gels or whatever. Just, I think one of the best things is training fasted. And I know there's huge split opinions on that, but I love training fasted. I think I did it by mistake and purely because I didn't want to spend loads of money on gels and that sort of thing. But heading out in the morning when you haven't eaten for, you know, 10 hours or whatever, and doing a run completely in a state of ketosis where you feel fully empty, that's probably as close as you can get to 5 hours plus of Ironman without having to do that sort of work beforehand. Yeah, I think there's little tools and hacks that you can do, and actually having all the kit sometimes hinders your actual ability to perform on race day.
Mm. I love that story about your mate having to chop wood to borrow his neighbor's bike. Brilliant, isn't it? That's fantastic.
Yeah,
and it's true. This nutrition, you know, 2 quid of gel, all of a sudden you go out on a long ride, you smash a couple of those over a month. That's the price of, you know, depending on how you want to look at it and what other supplements you're taking, you get a really decent coach for not too dissimilar amount of money. But the faster training,
you can sell anything to a cyclist, can't you?
There's always the carbon version, and then there's always the titanium version. Talk about financial black holes, my God. But yeah, you're right. The fasted training is a pretty controversial topic. I'm very much the school of thought of fueling, just because I love food. And so at least I feel a bit better if, you know, even then, if you don't end up to going out, you've got the toast and the peanut butter and the honey and
it depends on what you're doing it for, though, right? Like, I think one of the reasons why I love running is because you don't need any kit. It's just you, trainers, road, and you're 100%. Off, and it's so accessible to everyone. And then another layer on top of that is, like, when you take out fueling and food and phones and earphones from that, it's just physical exertion in the most rawest form. It just feels so natural. And when you get to the point when you've broken through that sort of hunger barrier, or your stomach's turning or whatever, and you're an hour or so into a run and you're suddenly in that flow state with ketosis and you haven't had to eat at all, I think that's where you're burning fat and it just feels like you can keep going forever. And I think that's what the best bits of running are about, and I've only ever got there without fueling. And then, you know, I can sometimes get back from a run like that and not eat until 5 p.m. in the afternoon, which I don't think is a good idea for sustainably training on. But you just get into that state of ketosis where you can just, you know, you basically not eat. And I think that's just so cool, considering we all prioritize 3 meals a day, etc. But
yeah,
not recommended, but stuff to play around with and things that you only notice if you start engaging with these sort of endurance feats.
Absolutely. But it is a very kind of niche community. You don't, there doesn't seem to be, if you're not within that kind of endurance niche, coming across these guys, full disclosure, I'd never heard of the Welsh 3000 before I looked you up.
And yeah, yet, no, nor did I, so don't worry.
I think it is such a, I absolutely love the concept and getting people out there, you know, into the mountains, hitting Snowdon.
That's where it's at, isn't it?
Good, get in the hills. 100%. But why is it such kind of niche knowledge? Why are these guys who, this guy who clocked it in 4 hours that you mentioned, no idea who that guy is. And these are unbelievable feats of, human physical exertion. And yet we've never really heard of them.
Crazy, isn't it? But yet we've been doing it for ages. The first marathon was run, wasn't it, between Marathon and Athens? And it actually wasn't Marathon and Athens, was it? He ran to Sparta to warn about an invasion. Mm. And he'd done 200 and something miles in one hit, and then he keeled over dead when he got back to Marathon, something like that. But that, you know, it's 2,000 years ago, and even before that, you know, it's absolutely natural to us, which I think is the coolest thing, is that we are actually designed to do these sort of amazing feats of endurance. But it's, yeah, of course it's a niche sport because it takes forever. I guess it's seemingly not that interesting, although so much more happens when you're in your own head for that amount of time than it originally looks like it from an outsider looking in. But yeah, it's a slippery slope. Once you start engaging with it, the goalposts just forever keep moving further into the future, and you can never, never complete. There's always somebody who's outdone you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more, certainly from a personal perspective, the more I hear about these incredible things that people have done, this constant goal shifting. Previously, you know, right, the marathon was the one. Then it was the Ironman is the one. Then you hear about blokes who've done double Ironmans. It's like, you don't even conceptualize it as something that could be done. Then you hear about guys who've done 14 marathons in 7 days, and the goalposts shift again as to suddenly on your radar. Right, that's a possibility.
Mine doesn't compare to the feats out there, but yeah, there's different levels, but.
It's you know, for the majority of people, who a 10K run is a big deal. You know, they sign up for that, and then it's, you know, the half marathon again, and it's just bit by bit, step by step. I think, and then yeah, the more you hear there, about these things, I think your perspective shifts. But you continue to kind of do these challenges and amazing feats. Kind of what's next for you? Do you have anything on the radar, or at the moment is it just doing this because you enjoy it and for kind of running's sake?
Yeah, well, I think the latter is probably the main reason, but I have got something else that you're doing, because there's also an element of, if you're doing all this training, you know, no matter who you are, how high you get up in society or how wealthy you are, you've got to train every day to stay healthy, or at least eat the right stuff. And if you realize that early on, then you might as well start setting yourself some goals. And that's kind of the way that I've taken it. Mm. And yeah, so I've got first ever actual official marathon, which is London on the 23rd of April.
Okay.
But in true hybrid mentality, I'm going to try and build in a bit of a challenge to that. And again, it's a bit of a mouthful. So, yeah, you can turn the podcast off if you want to. Now, it's a 500-pound deadlift, a 400-pound... So it's 5-4-3-2-1. 400-pound squat, 300-pound bench press, 200-minute marathon, which is a 3:20, and then a 1 mile in under 5 minutes. So 5-4-3-2-1.
Okay. Okay.
All in 24 hours.
500 pounds. What are we talking kilos there?
It's about a 220 kg. And then you got like a 180 squat. And then about a 140 bench. And then it's the 200-minute marathon, so 3:20. And then a sub 5-minute mile, so a 4-something minute mile.
Okay.
Which is going to be my my Everest, I think, actually.
Yeah?
Is getting the speed up.
Well, yeah. Is that the one you're most worried about, the speed?
I don't know. Have you done a TT for a mile before? I mean, it's just
A mile is, it's pretty horrific.
But I'm also, of course, when you pile on the weight and you're deading 500 pounds, then you start getting heavier and heavier, so the running gets harder.
Yep.
So it's a juggle between trying to get them both to balance and work concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why we love it. It's fun.
For sure.
But yeah, I think the speed aspect is going to be the most difficult, considering, in the past, like doing 100 milers and stuff, you can just plod along, one foot in front of the other. There's no speed mentality to it at all.
Yeah. And so preparation and training for that, I imagine the gym is playing a pretty large part. But then on the speed side of things, you getting the sprints in, how are you structuring that?
Yeah, so yesterday I had my first sort of speed session, which is a 20-minute 90% of marathon pace, and then last 20 minutes was all out. But yeah, there's pickups during the week, mm-hmm. which I'm quite enjoying, because of course it's quicker, shorter, more intense bouts of exercise, which is fun.
Yeah.
And it brings back that sort of like rugby fitness where you can feel your throat bloody bleeding inside, and it's a different level of pain. They're two totally different levels of pain, endurance and the speed stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to be able to, dip your toes into both and remember what it's like. It's good. No, I'm enjoying it. I'm not worried about the distance too much, but it's about being able to sustain that level of speed over the distance, which is worrying.
Yeah, no, definitely. And whilst you're training, is this a pretty solitary activity? Do you have training partners who you join you along the way?
But of course you can't count on training partners the whole time. So yes, it's brilliant and such a bonus when you've got people. But it's not always easy. Like you said, it's a niche sport, so you're gonna have to do most of it by yourself. But I think some of the stuff that I'm really interested in is having more training partners, because I think truly to get the most out of yourself and to push yourself the hardest, in my experience, always been when there's a slight competitive aspect to it and there's somebody else doing it with you.
Yeah.
I always 10 minute max effort, max cal, air bikes at the end of the session. If I'm doing that by myself, I just start to ease off, it starts getting shit. And you're easing off. Whereas if you and I were doing it, I'd be trying to peer over at your screen and see how many cows you've got on top of me and seeing if I could nudge that one up.
Absolutely. It's important. It keeps you honest.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's so important to have training partners, but you just got to find the right ones. And everyone's got their own agenda and training schedule, so mm-hmm. sometimes it doesn't match, which is even more antisocial. But yeah, I think some of the best conversations happen on long runs, when you're just plodding away at a nice, easy heart rate, having a natter. I think shoulder to shoulder conversations rather than face to face always brings out a different level of honesty. And in the sauna, actually, for that matter, in the truth chambers. Suddenly people start unloading some of their real dark and deeper secrets
when you're
in the truth chamber.
Yeah. What's the form these days in UK saunas? Is it a speedo affair? Is it a towel, or is it just
get naked?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no. Unfortunately, mine is actually an all men sauna, but it is. I think you'd get some odd looks if you walked in there without a towel or trunks on.
I think one thing you said there is really important and can have a huge impact on people. This training partner and how you find them and how you've come across them to really push you. I've certainly noticed it from a cycling perspective, going out with mates. It can have its positives and its negatives. It's an easy day and you're there being competitive. It's perhaps counterproductive. But on the fast days, as you say, peering over at the screen and the person next to you, seeing what's there pushing, it really drives you. where have the majority of your training partners that you've been fortunate enough to find come from? And how do you kind of keep looking for training partners kind of going forwards?
Yeah. Where have they come from? They're normally, friends who are just getting into it or wanting to do it. I'm just trying to think. One of the beautiful things about the sport is because it's niche, when I say the sport, just endurance stuff in general, is when you've got sort of training schedules in common with someone, it's like, why not meet up? If you're going to go out on a 3-hour run, you might as well do it with somebody. It's more sociable. So I think most of it depends on sort of timing. Sometimes coincidence just gravitates you towards people because you're both training in a similar sort of way. And that's always fun. And like I said, I think the conversations that happen in those bouts of prolonged exercise are quite interesting ones, or tend to be. If you put yourself out there and you turn up for a run at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning, everyone's had to get up at 5 and drive to Richmond Park or whatever, then you're going to meet an interesting group of people there because they're not the ones who are sitting out in the pub in the evening. They've prioritised training over. I've met some cool people. And Matt Fraser, he's got some of my favourite quotes in the world, but he's a CrossFit athlete. He always says, if you want to meet or find the most interesting people in your town, turn up to your 5 a.m. CrossFit class. And I think there's an element of truth in that. Sure. I think once you go on the journey, and I think I'd take a similar sort of stance to the whole networking thing in business as well. Once you really find what you want to do, then you start meeting the right people on the journey anyway, rather than having to go out and look for them. But at the same time, I think there's an element of eroded egos when you go into this level of endurance sport that people are very approachable in it. And not many people kind of have a big ego in that space. So I think you can just chat to people. And of course, a lot of people post online now. Like I do, I think people are interested in what I'm doing. So sometimes I, post the odd story. So people are putting themselves out there. And I guess it's easier to get in touch with people than it ever has been before. But there's a mutual level of trust, I think. I think if somebody's training in a similar sort of way or towards an event that's similar to yours or even the same event, there's a natural fit.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's really useful advice. For anyone kind of looking to get out there, do something completely different, way outside of their comfort zone, doing it with other people is definitely easier.
Oh, it'll keep you accountable too, of course. I think it's doing it with other people is the gold standard. What's the point in doing it all if you're not going to enjoy it and socialise while you're doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. It also stands true that you've got to find people who are willing to do that 5 a.m. CrossFit session, like you mentioned.
Who do you train with?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. So from the swimming, it's just a solo. I just go off and do it by myself.
Conversations don't last long underwater, do they?
It's limited, if I'm going to be honest. but swimming, I do find, is a very... It's an incredible sport. You go into this kind of meditative state. You've got limited oxygen. And once you find a rhythm, you're in a different kind of plane of consciousness.
I hadn't really thought about it like that, but it seems obvious. I did my first breathing class the other day, and it blew my mind in kind of where my head actually went. But of course, swimming is obviously like that. It's very patterned breathing, limited amounts of oxygen. Mm. I can see why. In my Ironman swim, it's the last sort of longest prolonged state of flow that I can recall. It was incredible. Felt like it went in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It was horrible for the first 5 minutes. And then after that, it just went like a snap of the fingers.
I was going to say.
I hadn't really thought about it like that.
The highest contrast from what you do in training to then what you do in the event has to be the swim. You've got this peaceful, unless you're doing sprints in the pool. But this meditative state in the pool, and then the event is it's a cage fight with some water added on.
I obviously didn't do that because I didn't do an official
Iron Man because of it was all cancelled that year.
Of course.
But people talk about that at the beginning. Yeah. People clambering over the top of you in the water.
Yeah.
So yeah, what was your experience? Come close to drowning?
I got knocked, goggles knocked off a couple of times, kicked in the face, pretty par for the course. But I have to hand it to my coach. We had some, what I thought was like completely ridiculous and also hilarious sessions.
Oh, really?
At his place where I was in his pool with my legs strapped to one end of the pool and just swim for 20 minutes. And he would jump on top of me, throw stuff at me with the woggle.
Really?
And so, yeah, the stress test did actually really help when you get into it. It's just about remaining calm, you know. Okay, and from a breathing perspective, right, we're going to swim, and then we're not going to breathe every three. We're going to breathe every five, and then every seven, and then every nine. And so if you miss that breath, someone's come over the top of you, or you've suddenly gone under the person in front, or whatever it is, you can just be calm.
Yeah, I feel like a fraud now. I've never actually done an Iron Man. I feel like saying that you've done one, you haven't experienced that.
You've done the distance.
Doesn't count. I'll do one day, I'm sure. It's just I'm in admiration for you having done one over and over again. But I found it quite monotonous kind of at the end, especially the bike stuff, but also being able to just churn them out like you have is seriously impressive.
Wow, I mean, just a bit of draining, and you need a target on the horizon for something to train.
How many have you done now?
So I've only done two fulls. Yeah.
Lots of halves as well.
A couple of halves, yeah, and then been getting in on the swim bikes as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they seem to become a bit more popular. It's been frustrating because just not being able to run, I wanted to keep active, so it was, you know, pretty ideal actually. You
can with your foot.
Exactly, you can still get involved, but you don't have the run off the back, which throws the bike into a bit of a different context altogether, because it's like you're not saving anything. It's full smash up until the end, which I did actually really enjoy. So now that's been interesting. But tying this all together, you still very much are focused on this concussion side of things. And the business that you've since set up, Conquer. Tell us a bit about that, how that works, what you've put together there.
Sure, yeah. So it was actually probably one of the sort of ideas that developed in training sessions, like I think most things do, seem to sort of accelerate in my head. But essentially what having going through that process of PCS and seeing a lot of people go through the same stuff, you know, it's common in sport, I just became incredibly curious about what the hell's going on inside your skull, the chemical changes that take place, and then how you can kind of fix that. And a lot of even endurance stuff is about identifying the needs of the body and then being able to satisfy them or fuel them so that you can keep going for longer. And what we've developed at Conquer is essentially a novel combination of herbal ingredients and natural stuff that appears to enhance brain function. And then you can watch that working from within our app, which is a neuroscience to prove cognition test that you can actually see the product working, which is was pretty cool when you're going through post-concussion syndrome to suddenly have something that you can totally take control of your mind. You can start supplementing, eating the right stuff, swallowing it was in capsule form at the time, and taking the test and seeing an actual tangible improvement in numbers in what's going on inside your head. And it's something that I now, the test and the formula, use even in multi-stage endurance events, where my latest one was a track race, which was a 100 miler. It was, well, a 24-hour track race, did 112 miles. Every 4 hours, there's a change in direction. So you switch and go the opposite way around the track, stop you getting dizzy. And
after 400 meters.
Yeah. I do a test each time we did a change of direction. And I just find it fascinating to see what's going on inside your head, because, of course, with ultra endurance stuff, it's more about being able to control your mind rather than having the physical capability to complete it. Which is why sometimes, coming back to the hybrid stuff, I think that actually, how are you going to carry your body over, you know, that's those sort of distance and those sort of prolonged bouts of effort is your legs and strength training, building a resilient body through resistance training is one element of that which might help you go further than other people. I don't know, but it seems like it's both in tandem work, and of course keeping your mind in check is one of the hardest bits on these sorts of challenges. I think the mental fortitude is something that you have to keep exercising, like your body as well. And so sticking in these max cal bike tests at the end of your session when it's been looming over you that whole time is like, well, I've finished this whole session, now I've got a 10-minute max cal test. It's like that mental weight that you're having to carry through, I think, can have a ROI when you have to sort of flex that. But yeah, I'm just really interested in where the mind can take the body. And I think we're going to go through this golden age in neuroscience where we start having more answers to all the questions that we have about the brain. And I just think it's awesome that we've got tools and nutrition that have been used for millennia that you can actually influence the chemical processes inside the head that ultimately, in things like endurance sport, will keep you going for longer. I remember being told that actually at the beginning, it's more difficult to do these kind of things without the right supplementation, the exact precise nutrition. And it does level it up. You get your nutrition in check, and that's 80% of the battle as well, is having the right stuff to help you recover and perform, and then on race day as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's an incredible niche that you're looking at here, and I think the one that's really kind of beginning to get some traction now. On the American side.
Exactly. I mean, the concussion bit is the spark of the process, and that's what captured our interest. And that's what all of our trials at Durham University have been around, is maintaining cognitive function, particularly for sports people. But actually, you know, everybody's got a brain that could be enhanced. There's a lot of ambitious people out there, and we're not feeding the brain with the right energy systems, promoting blood flow that could delve into a different dimension of kind of your perception of possible. I mean, this is what this podcast is all about, is perhaps changing people's perception of what's possible. And if you fuel the brain in the right way, you start thinking different and therefore performing different as well.
Absolutely. Where can we find more info about this?
Head straight to our website, conquer.uk. We've got an Instagram, we're on all the socials as well. Of course, reach out if you want any more information, but I think that covers a lot, but yeah. I can't think of anywhere else where you'd be able to find us. But
perfect. Really interesting, Humphrey. Before we go, thinking about, again, coming back to this this niche being quite undiscovered by kind of the mainstream and finding other athletes who've done kind of extraordinary things to hear their story. What kind of athletes in this context would you like to hear from, who you think they've got interesting stories?
There's a lot of hidden gems out there in the endurance space. Let's have a think. I think mountaineers are some of the most interesting people that you could get on. Sherpas, those sort of things. If you could, because some of the stories that they would have had, they're some of the most incredible athletes in the world, if you really think about it in the rawest sense.
I've just read Nim's Dye's book.
Have you? Yeah.
Yeah. What is it?
It's a good read. Yeah.
Mission Possible. I mean, just mind blowing.
But that sort of air of confidence, almost to the point of arrogance that he has, is something that you see in professional sports people as well. That sort of unwavering self belief that they have, almost to the point that you know, superhero.
which is, I always find I'm really curious about people's mindset, and that is somebody that you, I think you see. I actually skydive quite a bit as well, and I started taking it up when I was in the taper going towards that 200 challenge, because again, thinking about that, flexing those sort of like the mental fortitude muscle, whatever you want to call it. If you can't do it through exercise, then you can look to other things that also scare you and therefore help you overcome. So it could be public speaking or whatever, but there's always a seed of growth that you could have from doing something like, you know, extreme sports. But the point is that, again, putting yourself in places where you meet interesting people, there's a lot of special forces sort of chaps that come on their weekend and want to jump out planes as well. And you can just see an air of confidence amongst these guys walking down the runway to the plane, that they're constantly trying to challenge themselves. There's a new guy that comes in and they want to do it, and they've never met before, but he's challenging himself. Hey, do you want to do a 2A track on this jump? And you can see him sort of sizing him up, asking him a couple of questions that, you know, about where he might go wrong or freak out or whatever in that sort of fragile moment of jumping out of a plane for the first time together, having only just met each other 30 seconds before. But you can see that there's interesting people, but also ways to kind of keep challenging yourself, and it doesn't have to be through physical stuff. So maybe you could look at other sports as well. And, you know, skydiving is, or any extreme sport where you're going to find nutters who are interesting to talk to.
That's the key. No, I laugh because when you said it on the taper phase, I was thinking, what an absolute nightmare if, you know, you break an ankle on landing after all of that training.
Yeah, it was running through my head because one of the bits where people get injured is the landing. So if you're supposed to land into the wind and half flare, full flare, so you land nice and gently, but it's one of the bits where people get injured, yeah. So landing in with the wind instead of into the wind, yeah.
I definitely committed that exact mistake because I thought the wind was... I thought I could see the flag. This is when I had pretty bad eyesight. And the flag was actually going in the other direction. So I decided to ignore the walkie-talkie that was shouting at me into my helmet. And did exactly what you just said.
Have you done have you got your A license then?
I haven't. So I did about 5 static lines and then moved on to the dummy pools. I just did it for a weekend. So there wasn't enough time to do all the dummy pools that you can then do it yourself in free fall. But
talk about selling anything to a cyclist. It's same with skydiving. You get to get on the deck again after jumping out, and all you want to do is get back up there and do it again.
The adrenaline rush is arguably second to none. Humphrey, it's been an absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed this. And wishing you all the best with your 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 challenge. Looking forward to hearing how it goes.
Likewise, and seeing all your endurance feats continue as well. Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
It's been truly a real kind of inspiration for me to get myself thinking, okay, we're not going to limit this to the odd competition, to do a bit of triathlon here and there. Let's be a bit more creative about this. What can we do?
That's where the fun is.
Exactly.
It's also where you we have spoken about competition, but it's also where you can play your own games. You can exit the matrix and start making your own stuff up. Gives you an excuse for, you know, slow running, for example, if your also abilities to shift a bit of tin in the gym too.
Definitely. And on that note, thank you.
Thanks, Harry.
Really good to hear from Humphrey. Got me thinking about what's next and how I can be a bit more creative. Please let us know any other physical specimens you'd like to hear from by dropping us a message on Instagram or commenting on any of our posts. Finally, we'd really appreciate your support by subscribing and rating this podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really helps share the message behind this project to more people. Until next time.